Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Pololo, Sports Talk 790's Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Pololo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, opening day is closing in. Houston hopes the pitching will lead the way, so we'll take a look at how that stacks up, who we think rounds out the rest of the roster, and if the Astros have the firepower to take down the M's in the division. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. The highlight of spring so far for Houston has been some stellar pitching from the guys who Houston had hoped would ball out. Brown, Burrows, and Emai have given up a combined one earned run with 36 combined strikeouts. The front half looks very strong. The back half, Christian Javier has only surrendered one run, struck out 8 over 5 2/3 innings pitched, but his velo is still not where we'd like to see it. McCullers and Arrigetti have both been okay. So if the season started today, and we did hear from Dana Brown on Wednesday that the team will start off with a 5-man rotation, who do you guys think the projected 5 men will be, and what's that order look like?
For starters, I will predict that the 5-man rotation doesn't last 3 weeks. They'll use a 6th starter by the time the season's 3 weeks old. Obviously, Hunter Brown is the horse. He's the stud, coming off a third-place Cy Young Award finish. If he's not terrific, the ship's probably sunk. So while there's that expression, never assume, because we'll assume Hunter Brown's going to be fantastic. After that, Emai and Burrows, I mean, we're talking 8, 10, 12 innings, but tremendous innings from both. And part of why I think the 6-man rotation will be featured prominently over the long haul of the season, it's Tatsuya Emai. He and Burrows battling it out. It's not really important who's number 2 or who's number 3, but they're clearly 2 and 3. Emai, reared in Japan, his life has basically been pitching on 5 days rest. In fact, in Japan, you often pitch once per week as a starting pitcher. I see no way, no how the Astros are going to push it with Emai saying, yeah, when we have 13 games in 13 days, you're going to make multiple consecutive starts on 4 days rest. In fact, they play 7 in a row to start the season. Your first 2 starters, if you're going in a 5-man rotation, would only have 4 days rest for the second start. So maybe Burrows starts game 2, Emai game 3, which would then give him the extra day because of the first off day. So I think they're going to work through that, but they're not going to be a 5-man rotation team for the bulk of the season. It's just not how the game is played, and I think specifically with Emai in mind. I think Javier gets a benefit of the doubt going into the regular season as the number 4 guy. If it's really going to be a 5-man rotation, does that put Spencer Arrigetti in the minors with Ryan Weiss in the bullpen because Lance McCullers, with a $17 million salary for 1 more year, gets a benefit of the doubt? Cross your fingers and grab all the rabbit's feet and four-leaf clovers you can to be the number 5 guy.
That's what I'm thinking. And Dana said they're going to start 5 and then go to a 6. And you hit on it, Charlie. They hit a spot with 13 games in a row starting on April 10th from basically the Mariners series through the Guardians series. So we said they're going to go with 6, but I did find it interesting that maybe they start with 5. So we'll see. We were talking before the show, like, is Joe Espada on board with this? You know how Dana and Joe sometimes were just like, do these guys talk to each other? We don't know. But if we're projecting that, I'm with Charlie. The money for, I think 1 through 3 is obvious. Charlie laid it out. 4 and 5. I think it's going to be Javier, and they give McCullers a shot here. He also talked about that some of these starters that don't make the rotation will be in the bullpen, and they're going to be able to not just give you 1 inning. Maybe they can give you up to 3 innings in some aspects. So I think we're going to see some of that going on as well. So yeah, if we're just going with five, I think it is going to be Javier and McCullers. And then what do you do with Arrigetti? Maybe he's the guy when the sixth man rotation kicks off.
Burrows has looked pretty dominant early. I don't want to jinx it or put too much of an expectation on it, but I've seen some interesting comps on him on social media. Could we see a really surprising breakout year considering the stuff that he already has combined with that brain trust that the Astros have within their pitching and advanced scouting department?
Mike Burrows pitched very solidly for a poor Pirates team. Now, it was under 100 innings. His ERA was under 4, 3.96, which, you know, isn't going to have you mentioned in the others receiving votes for the Cy Young. But if he improves off of that, last season was his first full season following Tommy John late in the 2023 season. Kind of had his gap year, came back late, pitched a little bit in the 2024 season, and then work back up in 2025. The stuff appears to play. Another guy that I wouldn't be saying, yeah, let's go with 4 days rest on him. And then let's do it again the next turn in the rotation. You need to play the long game, but does that get influenced if 4, 5, and 6 starters are scuffling or the Astros overall get off to a sluggish start? And hey, you don't want to lose too much touch with the Mariners too early or other teams that might factor in the wild card race too early, a manager in the last year of his contract, a general manager in the last year of his contract. But I think there's reason to be optimistic. Look, going into the season, the Mariners rotation is clearly better. The Red Sox rotation is clearly better. Gerrit Cole, Carlos Rodon get back on paper. The Yankees rotation is clearly better. I think that's about it in the American League that you'd say, oh yeah, their starting rotation definitely projects to be better than the Astros. Oh, yeah, the Tigers, headed by Skubal and Framber Valdez. But the Astros have a rotation which, while not dominant, it's not going to conjure up memories of 2019 or 2005, but there are the makings to be really good. 1, 2, 3.
Dana made a point on Astroline saying he is going to protect his starters. Hunter Brown was the first name he mentioned. He's like, you know, you can't have these guys going down. You got to protect them. There's no reason to do that. That's what he mentioned. We have so much depth. That's why we added like 4 starters this offseason. He also said maybe 10 times. I don't think I'm exaggerating here that they should win pretty much every game where the offense scores 3 or 4 runs. He said that over and over and over again. So he's really leaning into the pitching here. I think with Burrows, he hyped him up. Of course, he traded for him, but he's like, this guy just wants to take you out. He really likes his mentality. And then Ryan Weiss, he brought up too, is somebody that's just a big dude, something I mentioned on the podcast last week. He really likes what he's seeing from him as well. So I think Dana's expecting all these guys to produce on some level, and it's a good problem to have, having all these extra pitchers. So we'll see how it shakes out.
If Dana Brown really said that the Astros should win most games where they score 3 runs, he's nuts. Last season, the Astros won an absurdly high percentage early in the season when they scored 3 or fewer runs. They were 18-27 in those games. Then the rest of the way, they were something like 3-33. Now, obviously, you score 0, you can't possibly win. 1, highly unlikely. 2, pretty unlikely. 3, but you're not going to get rich consistently winning 3-2, 3-1. The offense has to be better than that. The tipping point number is over 4. Then you're supposed to win most of the time. 4, if your pitching's good, you should win a solid percentage of the time. No team wins most of its games when it scores 3 runs.
Yeah, it's obviously too early to say, but we've talked about how good Ryan Weiss has looked early on. I think he's a good guy who could possibly be tapped into the rotation later on down the line should one of the guys in the back end scuffle, or maybe multiple guys in the back end scuffle. You know who else has looked pretty good? Rodri Munoz, who was brought over in the Rule 5 draft. He's been pretty nasty with the 2 ERA over 8 1/3 innings pitched with 14 punches. I'm pretty sure he's tied for the team lead in strikeouts. Obviously, he doesn't have any options on his contract, and they've got too many guys to fit into that rotation. I don't see how he makes the team. But congrats to him for making the most of spring. Speaking of making the team, we're going to talk about how the rest of the roster rounds out. Before that, Charlie, if someone's looking to round out their roster with heavy equipment, who should they consult?
I got it. A message for Alvin Equipment, which happens to be the oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. So if it's a Kubota tractor, a Kubota zero-turn mower, a Kubota compact track loader, a Kubota excavator, you follow the theme here? Alvin Equipment has it in stock and with low interest rate financing available. Hey, they've been in business 75 years at Alvin Equipment. They truly strive to deliver a superior customer service experience. They're just off Highway 6. You can call 281-331-3177 or find them online at, crazily enough, alvinequipment.com and work in that you heard about them on Stone Cold Stros.
So let's jump over to the offensive side of the ball. The biggest opportunity slash question marks for this team is the outfield. There are several guys who Dana Brown and Joe Espada had hoped would make a push for some of those spots. Cam Smith came into camp looking to prove something. He's looked okay with an 871 OPS. He's obviously been hitting the ball with more velocity as of late. They hoped Bryce Matthews might make the team by converting him to an outfielder, but his offensive production hasn't done much to help make the case for him. We talked about Taylor Trammell. Those numbers have started to normalize, although still carrying an 853 OPS, but 7 walks compared to 10 strikeouts. Whitcomb and DiCenzo just got back from the WBC, so not much to see there so far. Although Whitcomb's looked good early, but just too small of a sample size to make judgments on. How do you guys feel the final roster spots? How do you see that rounding out ahead of the season opener?
Well, it looks as though we'll go down to the wire on Jeremy Pena, so they may buy a little time. And that might be the difference in Bryce Matthews making the team. Because when the Astros are fully healthy, knock on wood, we know who the 9 guys who should be in their lineup are. Whether Isak Paredes can be in that lineup on a daily basis is to be determined. But you have 4 spots. That's it to work with. You're going to carry 13 pitchers. So you have your backup catcher, presumptively, Cesar Salazar. Your backup infielder who can play shortstop, the wizard, Nick Allen. You're going to have 1 outfielder for sure. Zach Cole, very underwhelming this spring. I know he hits left-handed, but you actually have to hit to matter as a left-handed hitter. So could Bryce Matthews usurp that roster spot? I think Loperfido is solidly going to make the team. And Cam Smith is solidly going to make the team. Guys like Kevin Biggio, you mentioned DiCenzo, who props to him for faring fairly well for Italy at the World Baseball Classic. Whitcomb, no shot for those guys.
Yeah, I think with Zach Cole, I mean, he's leading the team in strikeouts. That was the thing they were trying to see some improvement from him, and it just hasn't been happening. And Joey Loperfido, I mean, I think he leads the team in hits. So I think it's going to be Loperfido penciled in there when he gets an opportunity, when it's not Yordan and left, and we'll see how often they do that. But I think that's where it's going to shake out. And it's funny you bring up Cam Smith, Brandon. That was something Dana was super bullish on, Cam Smith. He said he has huge expectations for this guy. Obviously, he traded for him and he gave up Kyle Tucker, so he's going to feel that way. But he said if he's right about Cam Smith, that at some point this year, by the end of the year, he should be a guy that's hitting in the middle of the Astros lineup. And then if he's right about Cam Smith and he has a breakout year, they would be interested in looking to extend him.
If Pena is out, temporarily problem solved. Correa slides to short. Paredes is at third. But if Pena's there opening day or shortly thereafter, let's go with opening day. The Angels are going to be starting a right-hander in Jose Soriano. So if Loperfido is in left field and Cam Smith is in right field because Yordan's DHing and Altuve is at second base, that means Paredes is not in the lineup, which to me is just silly. Opening day, if Pena is there, Yordan should be in left field. Paredes should be in the lineup as the designated hitter with Pena at short and Correa at third. It just doesn't appear that that's even really on their radar.
I'm with you, Charlie, especially since the game's at home. I think Yordan in left field gives you your best opportunity to put your best hitters in the lineup. So that makes a lot of sense to me. But Dana's said, and Dana's the one we've been waiting to come around on this more. Espada has been very bullish on Yordan being the primary DH. But Dana did mention that he will be the primary DH, but he will also play some left field, and they're going to give – Altuve, he mentioned older players. We're going to try and give some of our older players more rest. So, and he said at the end of last year, we had to play some of these guys when they needed some rest and they didn't perform to that level. And this year, they shouldn't be in that circumstance. And when he talked about Paredes, I found it very interesting that he talked about him playing second and DHing and playing third, but not a word about first base. And he was pretty definitive in what he expects out of Christian Walker this year. So I wonder if that's, which is kind of surprising to me. I understand you want to back Christian Walker. You signed him, but I would think Paredes would be better at first base when you're giving somebody a day off than at second base, just as far as what his range is likely going to look like. I would hope, you know, scooping the ball and catching the balls at first base, he would be fine, but they just may not be really looking to go down that road very often.
It just smacks me as checkbook baseball. If they each played 135 games, which is basically one day off per week, who would you expect to be the best overall player in 2026 among Christian Walker, Carlos Correa, and Isak Paredes? I'm going the guy who's much younger and who is much better in 2025 than the other two guys. That's Paredes. But Isak's only making $9.95 million. The Astros are on the hook for Correa at over $21 million. Christian Walker, $20 million. As always, spring training sample sizes, small, essentially trivial, unless you're a young guy trying to claw your way onto a roster spot. So grains of salt. Don't panic over spring training stats. However, Christian Walker's looked terrible. Jose Altuve has looked mostly terrible. And then throw in Yiner Diaz, two hits so far this spring. Jake Meyers, not much more than that. That's a pretty sizable chunk of the lineup, but especially Walker and Altuve, big dollar players who between them are going to be keeping Paredes off the field a good amount of the time.
Yeah, and it's not even a question, obviously, of who projects to be better out of those guys, but like if Walker bounces back this season, great. But I don't want to hear about Walker's first half numbers or the road home splits as been pointed to by the front office. He has to play half his games at Daikin, regardless of whether they think, oh, well, he's trying to pull it into the Crawford boxes or whatever. The fact of the matter is that he's getting beat on high heat. I don't know how much that has to do with the Crawford boxes as much as it has to do with a dude whose bat speed just doesn't dictate that he can hit high fastballs anymore. On the other hand, I am cautiously optimistic that Loperfido can be a semi-revelation for them. It won't take much to be better than Sanchez was last year, but if he could be a legit major league player for them, that would really help add another young tentpole on a team that is rapidly aging with not a lot of exciting young options down in the farm. Now, I want to take a minute for StoneColdCruise.com because that's where you can get in touch with Nat Lapman with Cruise Planners. And as some of our listeners have found out, Nat is nothing short of a travel planning savant, whether it's short, budget-friendly Caribbean cruises sailing out of Galveston or airfare and cruise packages to go sail around Alaska or extravagant riverboat cruises. Nat can put together a customized vacation plan that's right for you. If your spouse has a birthday coming up or you guys have an anniversary coming up, or if you're looking to take the kids someplace, no matter the age, treat your loved ones to one of the most fun, comprehensive, and affordable travel options, and that's a cruise. Not only is his service free, but he has exclusive deals that can save you hundreds of dollars versus booking it direct. And his low price guarantee means that if the cost of your trip goes down after you book, your price automatically adjusts. You don't need a promo code. You just need to go to StoneColdCruise.com or call Nat or Jenny at 281-892-1150. You can also scan the QR code on screen. Support local businesses that support local content creators. Nat Lapman at Cruise Planners, and tell them you heard about it on Stone Cold Stros. We were fretting a little bit last episode about how Jordan was slumping, but he's broken out in spring and is currently hitting 804 OPS. Joey Loperfido, we've talked about his OPS, is at 958 through 31 ABs, so that's really encouraging. We've mentioned Zach Cole and Paredes. They're both tied for the lead in home runs, although Cole's 716 OPS won't get anyone excited. We have stressed this many times that it's only spring training. However, Houston has six players with at least 20 at-bats in spring that are hitting below the Mendoza line, and some of them tremendously below the Mendoza line. For those guys, Jake Myers, 125. Christian Walker, 115. Yainer Diaz, 095. And Jose Altuve, 107 with a 381 OPS. We have a long season to play, and obviously spring training numbers don't mean anything. But as it stands, is Houston looking at yet another season in which the pitching will just have to carry this team? And do they have the offense to realistically contend for the division?
They could, though Seattle's upside as a roster is just clearly higher at this point. And it's the first time going into a season in years that's been the case. But the page has turned on the Astros era of the juggernaut, the team to beat year in, year out, that teams could not beat in the American League West. Jordan, he is to the lineup what Hunter Brown is to the pitching staff. If Jordan is not healthy, and the Jordan we associate with most of Alvarez's career to this point, the Astros are not going to have a good offense. You just look after the top three, and we'll see how Espada lines it up. Paredes has to be in the lineup for it to be Peña, Paredes, Alvarez, but that would be my preferred 1-2-3. From four down, it's all question marks. And that includes Altuve coming off his worst season in 12, approaching his 36th birthday. He does not profile as a good cleanup hitter coming into this season. Ditto Correa, if he's in the five spot. Frankly, I think Espada probably will hit Altuve third or second, rather, ahead of Jordan, and then have Correa in the cleanup spot and Christian Walker five. This is a pivotal season for Yainer Diaz, who has been a ski slope, and that's not a good thing, graphing down since the spectacular rookie season. He was a 701 OPS. That is paltry for what are his talents. I mean, he doesn't need to be prime Mike Piazza or Johnny Bench, but he has to be better because he offers much more upside, I think, than Christian Walker or anyone else who'd be lower in the lineup.
Yeah, that might be why Dana Brown is so pushing Cam Smith so hard that, hey, by some point in this year, he should be hitting in the middle of the lineup. And last year, there was some points where he was hitting fourth. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. I expect Correa to have a bounce back year, at least fingers crossed, right? But I'm kind of concerned about Altuve also, guys. But I think Dana's comments make all the sense in the world. They are relying on pitching to get it done this year. He also made the comment that nothing lowers your blood pressure like having lots of starting pitching. And what I mentioned earlier, three or four runs should get us all a ton of wins. So sounds like to me they're trying to win with pitching this year.
I don't believe Houston's offense is going to be as bad as spring training hints at, especially when it comes to Altuve. But, and I hate to bring this up, but we probably need to address it just because it's the 800-pound elephant in the room right now. If Altuve has started a rapid descent into, we'll call it Jose Abreu territory, how does this team navigate that from a contractual payroll standpoint? And also, how would it impact his Hall of Fame candidacy?
He has his pelts on the wall. Shouldn't impact a Hall of Fame candidacy when you're a nine-time All-Star. Now, there are plenty of MVP winners not in the Hall of Fame, but a third-place finish on top of that, a fifth-place finish on top of that. I think Altuve is pretty close to a made man for the Hall of Fame. I'd be shocked if we're looking at a Jose Abreu thing. I mean, Altuve fell off sharply over the last 2 years, but, you know, he was pretty high on Mount Everest. He didn't crash to the bottom of the mountain the way Jose Abreu did, and I don't think it'll be similar. But if you're counting on him to be 2023 Jose Altuve, much less 2016-2017 Jose Altuve, it's probably a big ask in both quality and quantity of performance, playing every day or most day second base, about to turn 36 years of age. I think in a better lineup, you know, Altuve batting sixth would slot just fine. But if he's going to be in the three hole, that's a big ask.
I don't expect Altuve to turn back the clock and be just one of the best players in baseball. I think he should at least be serviceable and a contributor to the team. Maybe the all-star years are past him, but I think he'll still be okay. I mean, there's not a lot they can do. He's locked in a contract for a long time, and they're just going to have to roll with Jose Altuve. And like I said, I think he'll be okay. But counting on him to be one of your two or three best hitters, if he does achieve that, which I'm not ruling it out, I've just noticed as he's gotten a little older, I feel like he's guessing more, trying to ambush first pitch fastballs. I think he's become way more streaky. I mean, the peaks and the valleys, it's just he's either on it or he is scuffling so bad. I think, and that makes sense, right? As you get older, it's the consistency that kind of falls off. And we've seen that once he starts slumping, he's stuck in it a while, but when he's riding high, the homers are flying. I just think we're going to see even more of that as he continues to age.
And second base is a relatively weak position these days across Major League Baseball. So Altuve, offensively as a second baseman, can still put up credible numbers. It's that if the Astros lineup seeks Altuve to be a fulcrum, an elite offensive player, you know, for a guy batting third, you're supposed to be certainly over 800 OPS or a cleanup hitter, really 234. That's a target number. And I don't know that Altuve can claim that. I'd be very pleasantly surprised if he can do it playing 145 games.
Yeah, and I just point to how many infield hits he had last year. You know, so many things that kind of padded his numbers when it wasn't him just ripping the ball all over the yard. He got a lot of help. He still has that speed getting down to first base when he needs it.
In a worst case scenario, what I do wonder if there is a possibility of where they restructure his deal, maybe extend it out further to where it gives him a little bit more leeway to maneuver. But I hope that's not the case. And to Josh's point, he's always been streaky as a hitter. And I think he's always been a guesser as a hitter. But to also Josh's point, he looks like he's doing it more. And being a guesser and being streaky is fine. But when your bat speed declines and your pitch recognition declines, that's when you get into this dangerous territory of being able to be consistent as a hitter. Now, is he a three-hole hitter on most teams? No. On this team, it's...
That's Yordan, right?
Yeah. I mean, probably.
But sometimes it's got to put some second. So I don't know where they're going to bat everybody quite yet.
Yeah, it's a good question. We'll see once we get going here. Now, speaking of guys who are made men, Charlie, who are the made men when it comes to filling out your roster of heavy equipment?
That would be the team at Alvin Equipment, family owned, three generations going back to 1952, featuring Kubota products. Alvin Equipment, they have them all. Track loaders and tractors, zero turn mowers and excavators. Alvin Equipment, the oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. Low interest rate financing available. Full parts and service departments to handle any needs of yours there as well. Obviously, it's not an everyday purchase, but when you have the need, remember Alvin Equipment. You can call 281-331-3177 online at alvinequipment.com. Or can you heard it on Stone Cold Strohs.
Final thoughts before we're out the door.
The World Baseball Classic was a blast, especially if you're Venezuelan. So kudos to Jim Crane and anyone involved with the Astros pursuing and landing a site for preliminary games and the two quarterfinal games that were played here. The U.S. guys didn't choke. They didn't shame baseball America or anything like that. They lost one game to Team Venezuela that had a starting lineup comprised of all major leaguers. The USA had the best roster, but in a game here or a series there, this is how baseball works. And you know what? Well, our guys were patriotic and absolutely wanted to win. It means more to the Venezuelan guys and to the nation of Venezuela as it would have had the Dominican Republic won or Puerto Rico won. But what just a great fun event. In conjunction with that, if the Astros start the season 2-3 and the wackos are already looking for the ledge to wander out on, I guess we should brace ourselves for the fire Joe Espada and put Omar Lopez in there. The Astros bench coach won the World Baseball Classic as Venezuela's manager And hey, you know, he's been on the staff for a World Series winner, but the professional highlight of Omar Lopez's life happened with Venezuela winning that World Baseball Classic.
For me, is Brian Abreu. Can you hold down the fort until Josh Hader gets back? As Charlie mentioned, I'll be cool if he's back late April, early May, but that means that Abreu might have to hold it down for about a month. And we know he has the stuff. It's just about throwing strikes. And that's something Dana mentioned too. He gets a little frustrated with Abreu. Feels like he toys with guys too much, where he wants them to put him away in four or five pitches. And I think we've all experienced that watching Abreu, where he walks a guy maybe he shouldn't, and you're just like, come on, man, you have the stuff. Let's dial it in here. So hopefully Abreu can get it done, because he is a real luxury to have when you don't have Hader. Abreu's got nasty stuff. The Astros are lucky to have him.
They are lucky to have him, but the clock is definitely ticking on him as well for a team that is pinching pennies here and there. I'll piggyback on Charlie's point. Congrats to Omar Lopez. It's also started some chatter about maybe Omar being a dark horse candidate to eventually manage a MLB team. Does Houston get to draft off of this and celebrate as a partial Houston victory with Omar Lopez leading the Venezuela team? I don't know. Might as well, right? One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Reminder for Texans fans, be sure to subscribe to our other podcast, Texans On Tap. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for joining us. And as always, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.